Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Hey, coaches, before we get going today, I just wanted to thank you for all you've been doing to support this podcast. And we have an incredible lineup coming up here. We have just about every major college conference represented. We have a ton of FBS coaches, Division II coaches, Division III coaches, some great high school football coaches coming on the podcast to share with you and help you grow professionally during this time. I really appreciate all of you asking your questions on Twitter. Please follow me at Coach K Grabowski for our daily updates on our guests and your opportunity to ask questions. We will read them on the show and attribute those to you. So please contribute to the show as much as you can. Our football development model, which is something we've rolled out here at USA Football, and this is really for you to be able to help your youth football programs develop. It's about a long-term athlete development plan, something that comes off of the American development model, which is something that the USOC has put together. The idea is that we're able to teach skills in a progression starting at the youngest ages. We're also looking at the different game types we have, whether that's flag, which is non-contact, limited contact games like padded flag or tackle bar, and full contact, and the right progressions for contact teaching there as well. Be sure to check out all we do at footballdevelopment.com and check out what we're doing with the FDM, the football development model, at usafootball.com/FDM. On today's podcast, we focus on training the whole person. And joining me to get into the details of this topic is the Green Bay Packers strength and conditioning coordinator, Chris Gizzi. Chris, it's great to have you here on the podcast.
Keith, thanks so much for having me. I'm glad we made the time to do this.
Absolutely. So we have something in common, and I had a chance to meet the adult Chris Gizzi. Actually, we were passing each other. I think he was going down the stairs, I was going up, and I was like, Chris. And, you know, we connected a little bit later. Missed each other there in Louisville. But Chris's father, Al, was my high school football coach at Holy Name High School here in Northeast Ohio, Parma Heights, Ohio, to be exact. And Chris, I told him I remembered him when he was a little guy, him and his brother Doug, just being on the sidelines, being around the game. You know, Chris had a great career here at Cleveland St. Ignatius. We've had Chuck Kyle and Nick Restifo on the podcast here before. And Chris also, for, you know, we can't give a visual, but I would say there's very few things that I could describe that'll be something you definitely remember and can picture, because it was iconic. After 9/11, the first game after that, a couple weeks later, and Chris was playing linebacker at Green Bay, comes running out of the tunnel with that American flag. And I think everybody who's been around the game can remember and knows exactly that picture. And Chris, that's something, you know, just thinking of that and remember seeing that as it happened and what was going on in our country at the time, I think gave everybody chills.
Yeah, it's an unbelievable memory for me. And I think it gets maybe more special as time goes on, especially talking to people that I played with at Air Force, went to school with, current and former servicemen and women, how it positively affected them, and just let them know that they were always thinking about you. And I think anytime you wear a uniform, you represent something bigger than yourself. And what a blessing I had to be able to represent both an iconic franchise like the Packers, the NFL, for that matter, and the United States Air Force and our military forces. So I was really blessed that situation came up. I got to give full credit to the head coach at the time, Mike Sherman. You know, he was wise beyond the moment. I think he, you know, just, hey, this would be a great idea, Chris, why don't you get out there? And I think from that point, fans took over and carried me across that field. And I'll never forget it.
Well, living in Northeast Ohio here, and, you know, I know some guys who played on the teams that you played on at St. Ignatius. You won two state championships there in 91 and 92. But having known your dad and remembering you from when you were a little guy, you know, you were somebody that I followed, you know, reading about you in the Cleveland Plain Dealer and going to some of the Ignatius games. You know, it was always neat to see you play the game, because you weren't necessarily that prototypical NFL linebacker type, but
you were a kid, you could see you really understood the game and you worked. And I think that's something you really became known for throughout your career in high school, in college, and even into the NFL, was that you were just somebody who really understood the game, knew the game inside and out, obviously being the son of a coach, but also your work ethic is outstanding, probably, you know, second to none in those places that you've been.
Oh, thank you for saying that. I you know, that's a credit to all the men and women that I had a chance to be coached by, taught in school. You know, again, you have a great chance with a father who's a coach, and you know, I'm glad I got his blood coursing through my veins, and you know, he gave me a lot of drive just by being his son. And then, you know, he let those lessons develop. He never forced sports. He did emphasize, hey, when your football helmet's on, you're playing football and you're dialed in. When it's time for school, you're dialed into that. And when it's time to be with your friends, it's time to give to your community. You've got to be where your feet are, as kind of the saying goes. I, you know, I think that's the message that you get at, that was at Holy Name. That was the message that got taught there at Ignatius. That's what the Air Force Academy teaches, you know, and excellence all you do. So I think I was fortunate that I had contact with a lot of great places that reinforced that message and let me know, like, this is the way to operate. And I've been being rewarded for operating that way. So I think it's a standard I know we all hold ourselves as coaches to, and it's something we try to pay it forward to the next generation.
We could tell a lot of Al Gizzi stories here, but we'll leave that maybe for another time. your father coached at Cleveland St. Ignatius, I believe, prior to coming to Holy Name. And interestingly enough, Holy Name and St. Ignatius kind of went different directions as far as school enrollment, and Holy Name is much smaller right now, and you know, Cleveland St. Ignatius is a Division I school, but your dad actually has the last win over St. Ignatius at Holy Name my junior year, so that would have been 1986, and I think that was his last year there. We had a different coach senior year, but you know, he's definitely a guy when, you know, I look back, and you know, as a player, as someone growing up in the game, my father was a coach, but you know, could relate to your dad and the way he motivated people, and I can say, like, I understand completely where you get your work ethic. I remember being, you know, when I was a junior, I went through that period where, okay, I grew some my sophomore year, my junior year, I was like smaller, right? And played special teams my junior year. I got in games a little bit. But, you know, after that season, I remember sitting down with your dad and just getting completely motivated to do something my senior year. And, you know, a lot of that, I can remember your dad would take the time too. I there was a couple of us, you know, we got jobs after school, but we were dedicated to being part of the team and being in the weight room. And if you remember back, Chris, to the weight room, then it was in the basement of the convent. And during the season, it was a locker room as well. I mean, really just a rough place to be. But, you know, I can remember there was two of us who couldn't get to workouts after school. And your dad would actually come in the morning just for the two of us and work us out. And, you know, I really appreciated that. You know, a coach would take the time and, number one, understand that, hey, I need to work right now, but also, like, then give his own time. He didn't have to be there, you know, an hour before everybody else, but, you know, he would do it. And so I could see, like, just the dedication and all those things, how certainly you got a lot of that from your dad.
Yeah, I tell you, I, fortunate beyond belief in that. A lot of those lessons you just – it's not anything he forced or he taught. It's stuff you learned being around him. And I think that's what you so well articulated, in that, you know, you think about being a young man and someone pays you a solid like that. And now you've probably done similar things throughout your career. I know I probably noticed that, you know, what was I, 10 years old? Don't know what it means yet, but then it happens at, in my experience, at St. Ambrose in Brunswick, Ohio. It happens at St. Ignatius. It happens at Air Force. And I think that's where you think about us as a chain, right? Football players and coaches form this chain. And we all kind of link into each other. So I think those bonds, it's crazy. Now think about how long ago that was for us, 30 years. But now we can remember those moments like they happened yesterday.
Yeah, no, that's exactly it. And you're right. Those were things later as I became a high school coach. I can remember distinctly doing those things and thinking like, well, you know, I'm going to do this for this. Coach Gizzy did this for us. And, you know, so it does. It has an impact on you, right? And the little things, you know, that at the time, I'm sure your dad wasn't thinking about, but it, you know, it impacts people. And, you know, I'm sure those kids who I've done it for, it probably had an impact on them that, again, someone would take that time. So definitely appreciative of your dad. And, you know, I think it's neat to see where you've come, remembering you being that little guy on the sidelines and seeing you grow all along. And, you know, at St. Ignatius, I mean, it wasn't just football for you. You were a heck of a wrestler too. Now it was Ignatius and Ed's and for a lot of, you know, a long time, and still St. Ed's is really something that's, or some place has been known for wrestling, but you went to Cleveland St. Ignatius and, you know, ended up placing second in the state there. So wrestling was a big part of your high school experience as well.
Yeah, we obviously, it was still a really good program at Ignatius. Obviously it's going to get outshadowed even by the state clout by Ed's and Walsh and some of the other good Northeast Ohio teams. But I loved doing both at Ignatius. And I think anyone who's ever wrestled, like, you don't always like wrestling practice and that grind of getting in shape. I mean, I guess you do, but it's a tough sport. I think I was a better football player because I wrestled. And, you know, just to make that, I really felt that gave me an advantage, not only from the toughness and work standpoint, but I think being able to use your hands and feeling leverage. I've always felt that was a strength of mine as a player. And I wrestle with my four kids all the time, the two boys and two girls. And, you know, I think the world of that sport, not only just for it as a sport in and of itself, but what it teaches you about yourself and teaches you to help you in other sports as well.
When you look at that high school experience, and we are kind of in a day and age where there's been more of a push for specialization, that, you know, the three sport athlete has kind of become rare, and you know, there's less of the two sport athlete probably than we'd like to see. But I think you're a prime example. I mean, you're somebody who is able to go and play the game at a high level. And as I said before, you know, height wise, a lot of people would ding you because of that, you know, and maybe not recruit you, but you benefited from wrestling. You benefited from coaches being able to see what you could do there as well.
Yeah, I would say so. And I guess playing in the NFL is always every kid who plays football dream, but it's not necessarily a reality. You know, I think a lot of kids, you know, you want to aspire to that, but it doesn't consume your every thought. Obviously you're dealing with school and this. I think for me, having a wide range of challenges, both academic, spiritual challenges, athletic challenges, I think that's probably the thing to cultivate as much as anything. And that a kid might just like and play one sport, but are you training around that sport? Or are you just competing all the time? I think we could have a healthy debate about the fact that teaching kids to train, even if it's just in one sport, there's benefit to that. I'd have my preference. I'd love to see, you know, play as many sports as you can. And at some schools, that's a little easier task because you have a chance to see the field, and schedule wise it may work. Other schools, that becomes a little bit different challenge. But I think when it comes down to it, getting the right dosage of healthy competition, you know, the drive and the will to win, that's important. That's important lessons to teach grade school and high school, and allow that brush to kind of flow as the athlete matures. But also teaching kids how to train, how to prepare for something when the satisfaction of the competition or the game or the maybe the more fun stuff is a little ways off. Like I said, you know, wrestling is as much physically what you're doing as when you're in a grind and having to wrestle in the morning, you wrestle in the afternoon, losing and keeping your weight down, controlling what you're eating. There's a lot of things that you learn knowing that the match isn't for another 2 weeks, 3 weeks away, especially as you start a preseason for wrestling. So, you know, just using that as an example, I think whether it was wrestling or if I got into track and field, hopefully I would have learned the same thing and the benefits of preparation.
Chris, in looking, you know, back on this, was there ever a doubt in your mind what you were going to do with your career? Or I guess, how did this desire for you to get into coaching and especially in the strength and conditioning side of things, how did that come about?
That's a really good question, because I think when it's over for you as a player, and that could be whether it's high school, college, or definitely in the pros, it's your job. And now you're like, well, now you got to get a real job. And you start thinking about things that you gravitate towards. And I always knew I loved the game. And I actually had a great opportunity under Coach DeBerry when I was serving my active duty commitment. I didn't have the eyes to fly. So the academy kept me around for some of my commitment. And I served as a recruiter. I worked as an assistant coach, public relations. So they kept me busy, but it was a chance to kind of see what the X's and O's life was like. I can say I've been a part of a team. I remember this ever since I was 2 years old. So even that time when I finished playing, I got involved with some just volunteering my time and coaching. I think as I got my coaching legs developed, I really liked coaching everyone on the team. And the strength conditioning coach really has the opportunity to do that. I think there's just three guys on staff, obviously the head coach, the special teams coach, and the strength coach. You get to coach each player, and I think it's a unique challenge, not only in communication, but and be able to empathize and be able to build someone's confidence in the things they're doing well, and then to get them to reach outside maybe what they're comfortable doing or even they think they can doing. But, you know, no different than wanting to go from benching 95 pounds to 115 to 135. We start at the 95. We want to be able to get it a certain reps, and then we add that weight or we increase those reps. Like, there's a progression to do that. And, you know, it's just not limited to weightlifting. It's getting kids to believe in themselves. And, you know, I think that goes across every level. You know, confidence might be the best benefit we get from strength conditioning. I feel it's as much about that mind-body connection, what your body can do, as it is actually physically getting stronger or faster, quicker, whatever it might be. What it does for our minds and how our minds connect to our body, it's invaluable.
That idea, some of the things you talked about here of just training the whole person and understanding that side of it, and especially, you know, as you mentioned, being one of the guys who actually touches the whole team. You work with all the guys, like the head coach, like the special teams coordinator. You also then have a chance to really have a big influence on the culture of the team, right? And I think a lot of that does fall to those individuals who, and their team, you know, their teams, their assistants who are with these guys for a great part of the season, off season, working with them, communicating with them, whether they're in the building or outside the building. For you, how do you help integrate and build that culture for the team?
Well, I'd say the best thing about it is we communicate with it about it to each other all the time. And, you know, everyone has specific demands of their job. You really feel the X's and O's coaches, the amount that they have to teach scheme and everything that goes into the subtleties and the detail that demands. But I'd say this is across the board, especially here in Green Bay right now. We got coaches that are very, very passionate about how important that culture piece is. And sometimes, again, it could be just that we got culture, we got that. Well, it's how you communicate with each other. It's, you know, a set of principles that you maybe abide by, and again, keeping things simple in that regard. But I it starts from the top with what Matt LaFleur and Brian Gutekunst, the GM, that really gives us the confidence and the ability to have an impact and position ourselves to give a little bit to that culture. And I think it's how we treat the players. I think we put the players at the center, not to mean that we're here like, you know, this isn't a daycare or a pamper or a boutique health club service. It's a football team and we're doing this together. But in the end, we want to give the player the best opportunity for them to be exceptional on that field and to work with their fellow teammates. So, you know, when we put the player at the center of this thing, it's, you know, we're not going to squeeze it and put water in your mouth here in Green Bay. We're going to hand you the bottle because you take ownership in how you drink. And, you know, we want to make sure that guys feel pride and that they are a master of their own domain. They're a leader in their own personal endeavor to be a professional football player. Giving guys the chance to consult others and then bring that together so they get the best programming and the best workout for themselves. Like, we encourage guys to find other avenues so they can get better and find those weak links in their games, as well as make those things stronger for themselves. So, you know, I think that's an important part here is we don't ever want to cater or pamper players, especially in the NFL locker room. I think we want to make sure that they feel like, hey, we're engaged. We have a vested interest in achieving the same goal, and everyone's in on it. And I think that's a powerful bond between player and coach, because we know physically what the players put on the line is the utmost. They're putting their bodies out there. They're physically training themselves. It's a stressful job, but it's a satisfying job. Everyone who's come into this thing wants to do it. They're eager to do it. And we honor and respect that, just like the player honors and respects the coach's commitment to helping them to achieving what we collectively set as the team goal. I think that's a powerful thing. And I think we do that well in Green Bay, and we want to do it better. And I'm fortunate to be a part of an organization like that.
Before we got going, you were talking about, you know, your approach to this and how you don't view this as just you're building the athletic ability or you're, you know, making this guy just stronger, that you look at this and approach it that it is training the whole person, which I think is important, whatever level you're at. I think this certainly applies to the high school strength and conditioning coach or the coaches who run that in the off season, that also, you know, we mentioned culture here just a second ago, but it also builds into the culture of what you're doing when you take an approach that you are training the whole person.
Yeah. You know what? Here's a good story. When I first started out kind of in the private sector, you know, you work with sports athletes, you work with businessmen and women. You have the opportunity every now and then to work with first responders, law enforcement. And I had a great experience. And this is what kind of fortified it for me. What you're talking about is training the whole person and helping out this police academy as well as this law department. Had a good friend there. We exchanged some ideas. It's like, hey, come in, see what you can offer here. Gave some presentations, started working with the various departments, their jump team, their SWAT, even their beat cops, their bike unit. So some of the more physically demanding, but also just some of the, this is just general police work. And like with anything, you do a skill or a task analysis for each of these departments. And I think the thing that kind of jumped off the page at us, you know, and then you write this down, you're like, think about what you would do for football. Oh, you got to be able to run. You got to be able to shuffle. You got to be able to change. You know, we're looking at all this for law enforcement. And again, this is an honor to them. They have to sit a ton and focus and do this sometimes in the dead of night, still be awake. And then if they have to respond, they have to get up and run. It was neat to see, like, God, we've got to get better at sitting and getting up and going. So, you know, I started thinking about that too as I went to football, especially higher level football, where, well, how long are meetings? Meetings are 3 hours. Can we get, you know, can we get coaches to break up these meetings? Can we give them the guys a break every hour to stand up? You know, giving little advice like that, but also realizing that the players have a heck of a demand on their body just to keep the focus and the attentiveness that they need in meetings. So this is part of the job as well. It's not just the 2 hours on the field where they have to run and compete and play the game of football. You know, there's a life demand there. So I think if we're not training the whole person, and it doesn't mean you necessarily have to specialize everything, but you've got to create a robust, resilient health and fitness base. And it just doesn't mean being able to go for 4 or 8 seconds and rest for 30 or 40 seconds. Like, practice and the game gets you in shape for that. We've got to build up some of the other ways in which the body uses energy, the way the body becomes efficient. Obviously, there's a lot of tools within our trade, but I think when we look at the athletic development process, if we're not considering all the demands on the athlete, life demands, scholastic demands, and you know, that could be the studying for the professional player, but our students in class for 8 hours, boom, they're coming right down to the field. What are things we can do to get their bodies and minds right so that hour, hour and a half that we have as a football team or whatever, even just in a strength conditioning capacity, how could that be more effective? Because now we're seeing the athlete as the whole person that they should be. We're creating probably a little bit better program for them.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting aspect of it, and looking at how do you handle some of those transitions, that student who's been in school for 8 hours or that player who's been in a meeting for 4 hours. What are some tips in that regard? You know, within what you do to be able to help these guys make that transition, to be able to get them, you know, locked in physically and mentally, Phil?
Well, there's a few things, and I kind of just mentioned them. Like sometimes it's just mentioning to a coach, and I think a lot of coaches are hip to this now, getting guys a break every now and then. And again, this teaches the guys to disengage and then having to reengage. Sometimes with that reengagement, getting something where hands are on some competitive element, whether that be, you know, a lot of teams will have a free throw basket, even if it is a Nerf basket, to just get the guys to reengage physically. The body and the mind will follow, and vice versa too. So I think finding ways to keep things engaging, because again, the game of football, you learn it most and best by playing the game. Well, we've got all these other various layers to that, and some of them are sitting in meetings and watching film. How can that be the most engaging that it can be? Well, sometimes it's those short snippets of that. Sometimes it's blanketed with some stuff that's about getting up and moving. I know the value of a walkthrough, and I think more and more teams are utilizing that. So I'm not telling anyone anything they don't know already, but I think that's, you know, responsibility of the strength conditioning coach to embrace all of that stuff and have ideas that here's how things can flow. Because I would say the putting together a schedule for each and every day to create rhythm for the team may be more important than the programming in and of itself. And I know in most teams, it's a full job of coordinators, the head coach, obviously, and a lot of people with a lot of experience in that to make an effective schedule for the team to follow. It shouldn't be something just glanced over and, well, we did this so many years ago, or I've always done it this way. I've never really looked at the schedule. It's probably worth sitting down and assessing some things to that nature to see how effective that day could be, even if it is just a 2 or 3 hour day for the high school athlete. Now, the coaches are bracketing and working well beyond that, but it might then give them a chance to take a deep breath and seeing how efficient they are in the time they're spending with all their other duties along with what they're doing with the players.
Going into your second year with Coach LaFleur now, how much is he relying on you to be able to give some input into that process of what that overall schedule looks like?
I think we're in a great spot in how we work together. Speaking personally between Matt and I, but I think too, this is from a whole team standpoint, the demand for communication and the ability to feel like your voice is heard. We want to hear what you have to say. I think this has been a good move by Coach, and he welcomes that from everyone. Now, I think having the situational awareness, knowing when that's appropriate and when that's executed, Matt's created a great environment and great timing for things like that. But I think we value each other and our roles. And I think that's just the idea that every team could have. And in a way, that's what we mirror in our department. Can we close the door? Can we chop things up? Can we look at it in a different way? We have to have different viewpoints on it. And then I think what's true to form, this is as important as that deliberating and arguing about it, having some healthy conflict. But then the door opens and it's one message. Everyone's committed to it. And that takes being a pro. And I think, we all have moments where like, God, I really feel strongly about this. But I tell you what, the best thing for the team is like, hey, we have got to go with this message. We have got to go because this is what the head coach says and we're marching with it. And I think that's what we felt so much confidence in is when that door opens, boom, our guns are blazing and the players know it. We believe in what's said and we want it to work because I think if we're all pulling in the same way, doesn't have to be perfect, but we have to do it together. We got a chance.
Kind of playing off that whole idea of training the whole person. Like, this is also something that is lifelong, whether you're somebody who finishes up playing in high school, or you go on to college, or you're somebody who goes on and plays some time in the NFL, the fitness side of it, the exercise side of it, I know you feel strongly about that too, that this isn't just training these guys for the short period they're here, but it's giving them some tools that they can take with them throughout life. Talk to us a little bit about that aspect of it and your philosophy on that.
Well, when players have a chance to give input and engage and we communicate with them in that regard, I don't necessarily think, like, you're educating, but you want guys to feel comfortable feeling it and being in their own skin with it. There's a confidence that comes with that. Whether they want to go deeper and learn more, there are some guys that go that route. They get very cerebral with it, and that could be a good thing. It's also very good, and it's important that they can disconnect and just be an athlete and have fun and let it go. You know, the last thing you want to think is you're overanalyzing your running mechanics, or, you know, different than we've all seen it. Someone, we'll use the golfer for an example. You keep fiddling with your technique. You're just not swinging and letting it rip. So, you know, I think that can happen too. You know, players overanalyzing. I think wanting to give them and create, like, look, unplug from this, feel what it's like in your own skin. And then if they're doing it and they're able to find ways that it works for them, they're able to modify things on their own. So not every guy might like to back squat. But there's going to be an exercise they can do that's going to tax their body, and then the legs, their core, their various systems of their body, just like that exercise can do. So they feel they're still engaged with the team. They're still giving effort. They're sweating in the space. And now that athlete, there's that buy-in that comes with that. Look, there's a way I can do this, even if I'm injured. Like, I think there's no bigger tribute to a guy that, you know, after a game and the shoulder's sore, he comes right in and he gets to work. Or, you know, you get a finger that just isn't working the way you need it to grab a bar. There's a modification for that. And I think once guys see, like, it doesn't matter, I'm training today. I'm moving. I'm getting back in it. I'm in the fight. That's a healthy place to be in this sport. I think that's a healthy existence to just be as a person. I've got to keep moving forward. We're going to modify things. With safety is the utmost concern, but the mindset of the player is, I'm here to make gains. I'm here to push. I'm still a part of this thing. You know, however they might be modified. I think the highest honor is when you start seeing guys do that and they start sharing it with their teammates, how they can maybe modify, or that they can keep going, or that, again, this is the culture thing. Shoot, they even might take it home, and they'll share a story with you how they're doing some things with their kids who are coming in and playing sport. Now that's another link in that chain we're talking about. That's an important part of this game, that now they've taken it and they brought it to the people they care the absolute most about, their family. And I think that's where health and fitness now becomes a part of their life. They brought it home with them, and it's the standard they want in their household.
Chris, when you look at all the things you do as a coach, all the things you know, you've learned along the way, and now you're able to, in your position, really be a leader in that, what's the one thing you do really that you feel gives your guys, gives the people you work with, the winning edge?
I tell you what, I think I just said it back there. We always want to have the mindset that we're on the tack and we're making gains. Now there'll be a strategy to it. You know, we're not just throwing haymakers all the time, going bombs away, and whether that be lifting heavy or heavy conditioning. But guys understand there's a reason for a jab in boxing. It's to set up your straight, your left hook. There's a reason for this. So seeing that big picture, being tied in and understanding what the big picture is, like, it is always about what's, again, making gains, whether that's happening on the field, your life, your health, your resiliency. Because, again, I think, like everyone in the Northeast and in East, and where flu season comes in the fall, like, a resilient body has a better immune system to fight that off. I don't know what exactly lies ahead for this fall, but we'll continue on training the players in the same regard. Like, we want healthy robust people who can obviously live their lives to the fullest, enjoy their families, come to work, being able to dial in and focus, practice football. And then when they go home, they still got juice in the tank because, again, they're a healthy person amidst doing a very tough sport. But, you know, there's a lot of tough occupations out there. I think as we look to use fitness, it's not, again, just about strength conditioning as a football player. It's we need healthy people across the board in every endeavor. We want to be healthy in life first and foremost. Football will then come after that.
It's been fun to watch you grow in this game. I know you got a lot of fans in Northeast Ohio now who are excited about the position you have with the Green Bay Packers. So it's going to be fun to, you know, watch your part of that as well. And I really appreciate you taking time and joining me here on the podcast.
Keith, thanks so much. Thanks for all you guys are doing at USA Football. It is making a difference. I know everyone in the NFL is supporting that mission, as well as we love chances to be able to converse about it. Like, we could talk football all day long and maybe share an Al Gizzi story or two, but on another call. I'd love to come on back on any time and talk just about anything, man. This was a blast. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Well, we'll take you up on that, Chris, and good luck here to you and the Green Bay Packers in 2020.
Thank you, sir.
Coaches, again, I want to remind you of what we're doing with the football development model. Please push this down to your youth coaches. I think this is a great way for you to get some organization and structure beyond what you've already done. Check it out, all of our program development for youth football at fdm.usafootball.com. Again, check out our systems for blocking, tackling, and defeating blocks at footballdevelopment.com. If you register with your email, you get your choice of 3 free videos. There's some great things in there. I think things that as you get going again, you can get into the summer and maybe make up on some things that you might have lost if you had a spring ball, if you had time here in the spring to work on football. Some great drills for all those phases of contact. If you're enjoying the podcast, please head over to iTunes or your platform and give us a 5-star rate. If you have a minute, write a review. We really appreciate it, and we will read your review on our highlight show that we do at the end of the week.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.